Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show, back in the studio, live on the air. Yes, we are back from our month-long journey across this great nation of ours. And what an amazing trip we had. What an amazing journey it was. It was an amazing family experience. It was amazing educational experience as we discovered stories and people and just stuff that we're going to be talking about for months to come. And as we dig deeper into an area, we find new things. And that's the great thing about digging into history. All of the lessons that we learned that someone else had to suffer for. And that's the thing that as I was sitting down talking with my 11-year-old daughter, she's going, what was the thing? Because she was kind of interviewing me because she's in the process of writing her book. And she's like, what did you take from it? And I said, what I took from it is, everything's a big circle. You want to know what's coming around the corner? Look what was behind. Look at the history of the things that have happened in the past. And as we looked, as we went from area to area, a lot of it looked the same. The same problems, the same austerity, the same anti-government sentiment pushed by the wealth class, by the folks on the Grand Wall of Freedom. And if you missed our Dallas show, you got to go back and listen to that. You can go to therickSmithShow.com or the People's Tour for America. We've got a link at therickSmithShow.com for that. And listen to the Dallas show. Our time at the Bush Library, the massive wall of freedom in Granite, today's robber barons. The people who really, and to me, as I stood there and I looked at that wall, the people who, like in the past, have systematically dismantled the American middle class, systematically dismantled the American dream, have spent not even a lot of wealth, spent a little bit of their wealth to push for a destruction of what my grandparents' generation fought, bled, and died for. And there are a lot of things that, I was just before the show reading about when we were in Tennessee and we came across the Grand Treaty, the Coal Treaty of 122 years ago, where the Tennessee Militia, the National Guard, was called out to put those workers in their place 122 years ago. And just this last May, they got a bunch of fourth and fifth grade kids to come and sign a treaty, like somehow the 27 workers killed needed fifth graders today to sign a treaty for them. But it was glorifying the National Guard, which, understand, the National Guard across the country, they were set up solely to protect corporate special interest, solely set up to put down you and me. And I love the treaty that they signed, which, talks all about how wonderful the National Guard is. And, look, they have done wonderful things. But from its inception, it was meant to put down working people. So the lessons that I learned, as she asked, were, look to the history. Look to the past for what's coming around the future, because we all struggle with the same problems. How do we feed our families? How do we make a decent life? How do we have safe communities? How do we do the things that I think every generation of people want to do? And that's to live in peace, to live in safety, and to live free from want. And as you look to the past, you see some of the injustice. You see some of the criminal behavior of these corporate titans, and using our resources to do it is the part that kicks me. But as we learned from this tour, and I hope you followed along, we had a great number of folks emailing us. It was an excellent opportunity to get out of the studio, something that we're probably going to work on doing here in Pennsylvania a lot more often, because there's a ton of history, a ton of worker struggles here in the state, and we're considering, here in the next several months, maybe taking a Friday every now and again and going and doing some remote stuff talking to people across the state, because I like getting out and talking to people. I like, and I hope you do too. I got a lot of positive feedback from folks. I like the live feature of being in the studio, and we're working on that. But I also like being out and learning new things and being new areas. As always, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm interested in your thoughts, your questions, your comments, anything that piqued your attention, any ways you think we could make things better. But it is great to be back in the studio. Tonight, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm going to talk about the, you got to talk about the Zimmerman thing, the acquittal over the weekend. Going to have a lot of thoughts in the second hour on that. Voter ID back in the courts. Today the hearing, the trial began, to see if we're going to continue going forward with this idiotic ALEC piece of legislation, more bad ALEC legislation. I mean, think about all the stuff that this one group has gotten away with. The thing in Florida, the stand your ground thing, the voter ID, then they're going to be pushing, you know, a tax on minimum wage, a tax on unpaid sick days, a tax on anything good for us. They rammed down our throats a lot of bad. But the good stuff, not so much. Also going to talk about the Pennsylvania budget, which, I'm sorry, it's not done. They were back today, not done. You can say the governor signed it, not all done. And, you know, when I was a kid, when you turned something in, when I was in school, you turned something in and something wasn't done, it was still incomplete. It's not done. It's not finished. So this talking point of, well, the way we passed budgets on time, wrong. And also Harry Reid talking about the nuclear option. So it'll be interesting to see if Harry does it. I'll be honest, not in favor of it. I still think that the voters, oh, that's probably a bad idea. I'm still hoping that the voters in this Commonwealth and in this country wake up to the reality of who is stagnating and who is gridlocking our government. And it's a party that begins with the letter R. 420 filibusters over the last couple of years, more than, I think we're reaching the point now to where just in the last couple of terms, there are more filibusters during the Republican obstruction than there have been in the history of the country. And we should have a party for that day, because that will truly signify the end of a democratic representative government in this country. But again, if you missed any of our tour, the RickSmithShow.com, PeoplesTourForAmerica.com, 9,600 miles we covered in just about a month, a little under a month. We were in, I think, 23 states. And what it got for me, what it gave me is what a massive country this is. And what a beautiful country it is. And, you know, we went from place to place and the scenery was different. You know, the one thing I did take away from our travel, though, there's a McDonald's everywhere. We've really become a homogenous society because there are fast food joints, the same ones everywhere. The same chain restaurants. There's still a little local flavor. We got to go on the old historic Route 66 for what's left of it. But, you know, I look at this opportunity that we had. And I'm proud of the fact that we were able to pull it off. You know, just the three of us, along with my family, which was interesting. I still wish we would have webcammed that. That would have probably been fun to watch. My kids picking at each other, picking at Brett the producer. The fighting was always fun. Entertainment at its highest. I think next time when we do it again, that will be what we do, a webcam from inside the RV. But you know, I've had a lot of folks, really great emails, real great contacts. I appreciate all the folks that emailed us. It was an amazing journey that, you know, when I tell people, you know, what we did with the kids over the summer, you did what? It was amazing. I mean, it was one of those once-in-a-lifetime trips, and you guys got to come along with us. and see all of the things we got to see, because we were able to go and talk to people in all those different areas. And I want to go back, and as the weeks and months progress, we're going to go back and talk to some of those folks again, and a little more in depth, a little more detail, because, you know, when you're running, you got 6 hours of driving to the next stop, and you got to do all of the other things that go along. It's a tough process. But I think it was well worth it, and I think the end result was something that all of us are going to be proud of, and something that was historic in nature, and maybe we'll do it again. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
In May, workers at a Guitar Center store in Manhattan voted to join the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union. That vote has inspired workers at a Guitar Center store in Chicago to make an attempt to do the same. Brian Webb is one of the employees seeking to organize the Chicago Music Instrument Store. He's been at the store for 7 years.
I really considered staying with Guitar Center, you know, for a long time, and I love the job, I love the people, I love the atmosphere.
Webb said he's not the only Guitar Center employee who would like to make a living doing the work they love.
You know, in our store, there's multiple people that, you know, have wives and kids and families, and, you know, these aren't, you know, high school kids, you know, working for a little extra cash.
Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. It appears that another tragic moment in radio history as our feed went down. Again, you know, it's always at the command here. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts, your questions, your comments, whatever's on your mind. So today, the voter ID case back in court. 1 o'clock this afternoon, I guess it started, as it's the first day to permanently overturn the law. After, you remember last year, they put it on a temporary hold after Judge Simpson said, you know, not for this election, you know, down the road, after a little time to implement it. And you go, you know, how many months has it been since the ALEC piece of legislation, this voter suppressing voter ID? How many people have gotten an ID since this has been passed? So you're talking about the law being passed 16 months ago. So 16 months ago they passed this, and yet in 16 months, just 17,000 of these IDs have made it into the hands of those without. Now you go, well, it's because there aren't any people without one, right? We're talking about 750,000 people who don't have an ID. And you go, well, who are these people? Well, who are these vagrants? Who are these? Well, they're your senior citizens. You know, people who don't drive anymore, who, I got to be honest, my grandmother, who hasn't driven in like 15 years, shouldn't be driving. She doesn't have a valid driver's license. They're college students who, you know, most of them might not have a license because they don't have cars. So you got the elderly, you've got students, and of course, you know, someone I knew, poor people. You know, where I grew up, most people didn't have a car. So if you don't have a car, why are you going to spend the money to get a license? And the argument is, well, they're free. You go in there, they're free. You can go get a free ID. Okay, well, walk me through this. Let's say you're a 93-year-old woman like the lead plaintiff in this case, Vivian Applewhite. You're 93 years old, you're wheelchair bound. Where are you going to go to get your free ID? Are you going to jump into the car and drive? No, can't do that. Is there a bus that goes by there? At 93 years old, going to be a little difficult to get there. Probably not. So you're probably just going to go, well, you know what? I'm just not going to be able to do it anymore. I'm not going to be able to vote. And I remember when my grandmother gave up the ability to drive. She was heartbroken. That was the loss of her freedom. And, you know, as I look at this and I look back on that moment and I go, you know, that was really, in her view, that was the end of her life. My freedom has been taken. And I then think about, you know, what if your right to vote was taken away? I mean, all because you couldn't get to a specific place on a specific day at a specific time. Now, understand, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where there are 67 counties, there are only 71 of these driver's license centers that are PennDOT approved. 71 of these voter ID centers in the Commonwealth. 71. There are 9 counties. 9 that have no voter ID centers. 9 counties. So let me ask you, where do you go if you don't have a car? Where do you go if you can't drive? Where do you go if you're a college student? Well, you don't, because they don't want those people voting. Don't want those. Understand who passed this law. It's the rabid gerrymandering Republicans who, they like power. And what do you do when you have power? You consolidate it. So you look at the gerrymandering they did with the districts. First one being thrown out as unconstitutional. Next one, not any better. And then you take people's rights to vote away. So you make their votes meaningless by making districts where, you know what? What's the point in voting? You're never going to win in most of these districts. They're decided before a ballot is cast. So they've gerrymandered the districts to disenfranchise voters, because what's the point? No one's ever going to win other than who was meant to win. And then in those areas where maybe there's a shot, you disenfranchise the votes. Because maybe, and understand where this is. You're talking about high poverty areas. You're talking about high dense areas like Philadelphia, like Pittsburgh. You're talking about the cities. So if you can disenfranchise those people, if you can hold down the votes in those areas, as Governor Corbett said, we can just hold down that vote in Philadelphia, we can win. Understand what party did not win a statewide row office the last election. The Republicans know that the voter registration is well out of their range of winning statewide elections when Democrats bother to vote. They understand that. So what they need to do is, as Corbett said, we need to hold down that vote in Philadelphia. If you can hold that down by suppressing the vote, you got a chance of winning those row offices. You got a chance of being the attorney general. You got a chance of being the auditor general, the treasurer. You got a chance of maybe this guy maybe being governor again. Now, so you got 71 of these centers that are open on only certain days. Some of them open only a couple of days a week. They have certain limited hours on certain days. There are just 71 of them. 9 counties have nothing. Does that sound to you like a state that wants people to get IDs? I said last year when this was going on around election time, if Republicans truly were concerned about people having IDs and voting, and I understand the argument. I get it. You know, you want people to be who they are, and yet we've yet to find anyone who has voted as someone else. There's no one been convicted. There was no one on trial. In fact, if you remember the trial from last time around, the Commonwealth stipulated that there's never been a case of voter fraud that they've found, that they've convicted, or that is being in the process of being convicted or investigated or any of that. Not one case have they found that this voter-suppressing voter ID law would have stopped. So the medicine, again, what they do, the medicine for the disease, well, is going to kill you. And that's what it's supposed to do. I said last time, if the idea was to get people the IDs that they needed to vote, if the real intent of the law was to make sure that the people had the right to vote and had the identification card to do it, Why didn't they? In every one of the 9,300 polling places in this Commonwealth, why didn't they have someone on voting day? In all 9,300 polling places across the Commonwealth. Think about this for a second. 71 right now. 71 polling places. 71 of these voter IDs, some driver's license centers, you can go get this ID, which some people I've talked to say they initially want to charge you for until you say, I want a free one. Because if you don't demand free, they charge you. We've seen that time and time again. So you got 71, nine counties without one, 9,300 polling places across the Commonwealth. If the idea, as I said, if the idea is to get people IDs, why didn't they set up someone in every one of those 9,300 locations on voting day to say, we're here, we've got a camera, we can make IDs for you. Right here, we can make sure if you don't have one, we're going to get you one. I'll tell you why they didn't do it. And it's pretty simple. Probably more people would have come out to vote. And that's against what they want. They don't want you voting. They don't want me voting. I go back to my high school government teacher who told me as an 18-year-old, don't bother voting. Told the whole class, don't bother voting. Makes my vote that much stronger. Stay home, sit on your hands. Makes my vote that much stronger. Because the fewer of you that go out to vote, the fewer of all of you, if we can get a generation to walk away from it, the easier it is to control. The easier it is to have a minority win elections. And the Republicans, these austerity-loving, anti-government, I want to be nice here. I was going to use the word freaks, but the sad reality is they're not. They're rabid ideologues who have been, for at least a generation, cultivated, for at least a generation, indoctrinated, step after step. Our academic institutions. And you go back to Florida State University, the Koch brothers gave them $2 million, two with an M, just $2 million to a massive university. So they get veto power over all of the economics professors hired in that university. That's power. And these are the fruits of those ill-gotten gains. These politicians who, oh, the free market works if we let it. Just wait. It's coming eventually. You know, your stomach will stop rumbling at some point. Maybe when you're dead. The other part of this voter suppression law that they've come up with, that, you know, an ID just isn't good enough. You know, when I was in Ohio, they had a state vote. They had a state ID that, let's say you weren't getting a driver's license, you just needed an ID for cashing checks or getting a hotel room or whatever. You needed an ID to say who you are. It never expired. Didn't have an expiration. No expiration date on it, nothing. It never expired. It's who you were. The law here, thanks to Alec and thanks to the Republicans here in Pennsylvania, the law that they passed some 16 months ago says it has to have an expiration date on it. And it has to be unexpired. So it's got to be within the date. So if you had a student ID, or as we found out, a lot of the veterans had VA cards that didn't have dates on them. A lot of the military IDs had nothing. Some PennDOT stuff had nothing. A lot of it had no dates on it because why? You're going to have it until you die. Well, can't have that because we need to make things cumbersome. Stop and think about this for a second. The people who passed this law are our good friends in the Republican Party. You know, the fiscal conservatives, the people who care about pinching every dime. In fact, they're so tight, they squeak when they walk, and when they squeeze, when they grab a quarter, the eagle screams. When it comes to, you know, programs for the poor and the elderly and education, that's absolutely true. But when it comes to wasting money frivolously, like this law, why would you set up a system that says every couple of years, I guess it's every 10 years, you have to go back and get another ID? That's more state resources. You got to have a worker there because it's got to be free, right? So we're doing free services. Tell me what business is going to voluntarily do free services and call that a good business practice? Okay, you did this. You got it done once. Why do you have to continue to do it? For me, none of this does anything to help people vote. Personally, while I was at the Bush Library, and you know, at lunch today, I was showing some pictures of our time at the Bush Library. I came across one, one of the very famous pictures of the woman with the headset on. I actually don't know what they called. They used to call, I guess, the burqa, right? With the burqa over her head, smiling with the ink on her finger, with her finger up, with the ink on her finger, going, "I just voted." And I'm thinking about this and going, okay. You know, George Bush is telling me how he single-handedly liberated the Iraqi people so that this woman with her ink finger could vote, yet it's the exact same party who's telling people like my grandmother, "Sorry, you don't have an ID. You can't vote. We have put a barrier between you and your voting box." But yet the people in Iraq, well, they just put their finger on an ink pad. Explain that to me, because I'm really curious to find out the rationale behind it. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. I mean, I've talked to a bunch of people. I have to have a driver's license to rent a car. I have to have a driver's license to rent a hotel room. In fact, it's mandatory by law, thanks to the Patriot Act. Again, another Bush era wonder that we used to not have to deal with, but now we got to make sure that the guy behind the counter knows who we are. But I'm looking at this, and I'm going, you know, explain to me why this is a good thing. You know, we need to have it to rent a car. We need to have it to get a hotel. So, Rick, you know, why would you be against it for voting? Pretty simple. And it comes down to very simple things. I hear a lot of people talk to me about their constitutional rights. I have the freedom of speech, I have the freedom of this, I have the freedom of that, la, 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 la. And I say, yeah, you do. Between you and your government. Not between you and private industry. So if a rental car company wants you to prove who you are and wants verification of your credit card and all of that stuff, if that's between you and them. It's not you and your government. I would argue that maybe we should be pushing back against those things as well. But it seems we've given that up, and we gave it up willingly years ago. Just like we've given up willingly any privacy. And you go, oh, but I like my privacy. You've given it up. How many people have gone in and signed up for those idiotic store cards? I'm going to get a discount! Yeah, but you just gave them every bit of information they're ever going to need to market to you and your family. And at some point when some enterprising young .com person says, hey, I got an idea. We'll put one of those universal card, which I guess they're already starting. You only have to carry one card, and they centralize all of your data. It won't be between you and your government. It'll be private industry, which I got to be honest. Private industry supported by government scares the living hell out of me. And it should scare you too. This voter ID thing should scare everyone else. Because right now you go, well, I got an ID now. First they came for the communists. I said nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists. I said nothing. Eventually, they're going to come for you. Going to take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Beat up cars, guitars, and drummers go crack, boom, bam. R-O-C-K in the USA. R-O-C-K in the USA. R-O-C-K in the USA. Yeah, yeah.
in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
America the beautiful. America the greatest. We're number one, right? Absolutely, naturally, and indisputably. At least, that's the theocratic pronouncement of far-right-wing nativists who are presently put forth a dogma of American exceptionalism, using the concept as a not-to-be-questioned litmus test of your and my patriotism. Never mind that on many crucial issues of national achievements, our good old U.S. of A. has slipped a bit in recent years, and a simple-minded assertion that we're number one doesn't make it so. For example, in the annual rate of educational improvement, a bedrock indicator of a nation's future ability to thrive, the U.S. has tumbled to 25th. Say it loud and say it proud, we're number 25. Not only does that place us behind such education powerhouses as Germany, but also behind Latvia, Portugal, and Slovenia. Yes, America remains one of the world's richest nations, yet our wealth is more concentrated in the hands of a rich elite than nearly every other nation. China has more democratic distribution of riches than our society does. So does Bangladesh, the Congo, Haiti, Mexico, Nigeria, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and all but six other countries. Healthcare? We're only 38th and dead last among wealthy democracies. Our tax code is the least progressive in the industrialized world. The quality of America's infrastructure ranks a poor 25th, and in a category that not long ago was a source of great national strength and pride, the wealth of our middle class has fallen below that of 26 other nations. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the past century, America became great not by merely believing in some hocus-pocus exceptionalism, but by achieving greatness through deliberate and determined public investments in the common good. And that's our path back to being number one.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again. Because God is a Republican.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back in the studio after more than a month on the road doing the cross-country labor history tour. We almost 9,600 miles we covered in the month we were gone. All the way down the southern part of the country, all the way to California, up to Portland, Oregon, and then back across the middle of the country, the heartland of the nation. What an amazing, amazing trip it was. Just great stuff. And if you missed any of it, RickSmithShow.com or PeoplesTourForAmerica.com. So, during the time we were gone, the Republicans in the House and the Senate and Governor Corbett claimed that they have passed another budget on time. And Corbett did sign something. He signed what they call the primary budget bill on June 30th, but it wasn't done. So today, Republicans Republicans in the House came back to the Capitol after their little 2-week hiatus, a little vacation. You know, hey, they did their job, 2-week vacation. How do we get that? Maybe they should push for that for us. Anyway, they had their little session. And what it was over is a handful of things, one of it being this provision that the House Republicans wanted, this payday lending provision, that the Senate, as I understand, the Senate stripped out. Now, we've talked about these payday lending schemes. And it's what amazed me as we were going across the country. And we had really ventured into some really high poverty areas. And look, this is an amazing country. This is a huge country. This is a prosperous country. But this is a crumbling country. We have allowed communities to just crumble. And I got to be honest, you know, as a lifelong Broncos fan and someone who's always wanted to go to Denver and see Broncos Stadium and where we were at when we went through the city, we're talking a lot of poverty. And in the areas where you saw the highest poverty, and I'm not, you can't make this up. The market, this is where Republicans are right. The market will decide. The market decides where exploitable people are. The market decides who can be taken advantage of because they're willing to give you a $20 loan at 370% interest. Because you need to put food on the table today. This payday lending bill that they keep wanting, it keeps coming up, doesn't it? And, you know, I've had a number of conversations with friends and neighbors over the past couple of months about this. And most people are like me. Until I really delved into what these payday lending places did, I was like, you know, who cares? I'm never going to get one. What's it matter to me? I've got a credit card. I've got some elasticity. I can charge whatever I want. I'm okay. Most of the people I know, they're okay. The kids need something for school? Well, you know, we can put it on the credit card. You need to put food on the table? You need to wait till next week? You got that little piece of plastic that gives you some leeway. But then you look into this. You go, who are these people targeting? And you look at the fact that the U.S. government has banned them from being within a certain radius of military bases because it's a national security problem. You look at that, the number of military families who got jammed up because, oh, they don't make enough to live on. And that these predators were all too happy to fill that void. To me, this payday lending thing, it's a scam. When I was a kid, they used to have a name for it. It's called loan sharks. But instead of breaking your legs, they just break your bank. And think about this. I mean, this is the beautiful part of this. You have to have a checking account, right? So you write them a check dated for a certain day. Let's say you don't have the money to go in there on that day. They cash the check anyway. The banks love it because, well, they tried to cash the check. It bounced. They charge you a fee. The payday lender company charges you a fee because it came back. They try it again, and this vicious cycle continues. And now the bank's coming after you because you got the government to come after you. Then they can take you to court. It's a great scheme. And it's an amazing ripoff. And I look at this and I go, well, why would Republicans want this? I mean, it's out-and-out theft in my view. Why do they want it? Well, a number of reasons. One, it's never going to affect anybody that they know. You talk to the representatives who have high poverty in their districts where these schemes are going to end up. They don't want it because they know what it brings. It's all of those people who don't come from those districts who want to impose that on the other districts. And I love that kind of, we want local control. And I'm waiting to read the bill to see if it's one of these things that, again, that the Republicans who talk about local control and how much they love local control but yet strip it away, you know, like they did with the Marcellus Shale. I'm waiting to see if local communities can then ban them. Because if I were a Democrat, in the House, I'd say, okay, I'll vote for it. But we amend it that if the local city council or the local, you know, governing body doesn't want them, they're banned from that area. Let's put them in the wealthy areas. See how that works out. Because to me, all of this comes back to poverty. And as someone who grew up in a high poverty area, I see these schemes and I say, you know, it's a ripoff to make poor people poor. You know, I forget who said it. It's an apt quote. It's expensive to be poor. And they're right, because you end up getting broken down, beaten down cars. You can't afford a new one, so you end up going to one of these people who put the lipstick on the pig, so to speak, and roll back the odometer and do all of those things that they do to make, you know, a lemon more palatable. Charge a high interest rates because, you know, you're not getting a credit from anywhere else. Payday lending. You name it. Anything to make poor people poor. And I see today that the House Republicans, they're going to go on a major tour. And, you know, anytime one of these folks tells me that they care about the poor, anytime one of these folks telling me that they want to help the poor, you better beware. They have a cute little name, Empowering Opportunities, Gateways Out of Poverty. Their initiative that's going to take them around the state, because they're going to go on a listening tour. They're going to develop and refine their ideas for legislation. I can help you with this. And I think the last 2 years, I've been doing it for you. Just a thought, if there's any Republican out there who has a better idea on how you fix poverty, I'd love to hear it, but it's simple. It's three quick letters. It's called JOB. If we had a job plan, if we got poor people jobs, if we had public transportation so that people could get to the jobs, if we had child care so that people who have children can get their children into a program where they don't have to worry every day that something's happening to their children and they go to work, that would be a help. Education, that would be a great help. Health care would be a great help. There are a lot of things we could be doing, a lot of things we should be doing. Holding little meetings, pretending that we give a rat's behind about poverty is not one of them. And the numbers point to about 1.5 million people in the Commonwealth who live in poverty. About 1.5 million people. And what's interesting to me is all of the Republicans point to the Johnson war on poverty. And I guess I'm old enough to remember some of those programs before Reagan destroyed them. And, you know, they love to go. The numbers today and back when Johnson was president, they aren't much different now. And they would be right. The Republicans would be right in saying that. Today and back in the mid-60s when Johnson passed this stuff, the rates are similar. Child poverty rates are similar. Family poverty rates are similar. What they don't take into effect is that over the years, the Johnson war on poverty actually reduced poverty. And considerably. And it lessened the painful effects of people in poverty. It said, we're going to make sure that people get fed. We're going to make sure that people get educated. We're going to make sure that people get health care. All of the things that the Republicans are pushing back against. You know, Medicare, Medicaid. We want to make sure that people get health care. They want to destroy both of those. The food stamp programs, make sure that people get fed. Want to destroy all of them. Does it make sense? I mean, I look at this and I say, you know, gateways out of poverty. You know what the best gateway out of poverty is? How about raising the minimum wage? You know what the best gateway out of poverty is? How about giving the people the opportunity to join a union and to bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions? How about that? Instead of doing what they're doing, which is destroying programs that worked, I came across this website, which you gotta love. Anytime Visa and McDonald's come together to develop a website, and you can go check it out yourself. It's called practicalmoneyskills.com. Practicalmoneyskills.com. Gotta love this. It's teaching those workers how to budget their money. See? Because you can work. You can work at McDonald's and you can live. $8.25 an hour is about the average wage that they budget for. $8.25. Even though the minimum wage, $7.25. Right? Right. So you go through and you look at, because it's teaching those people, you know, those people with no skills, teaching them how to budget. Because, you know, McDonald's workers should be able to live on minimum wage, right? You just got to tighten your belt, right? So I go through and I look at the sample monthly budget that they had on the website. And you can't make this up. McDonald's and Visa came up with your first job, your monthly income at McDonald's, minimum wage, bring home $1,105 a month. That is your bring home wage, right? That's your first job. Your first job. Then they go in, because look, at minimum wage, you're talking before taxes, you're talking about $1,160. So they're saying after taxes, you're going to bring home $1,105 in your first job. Then your second job, where the second job came from, I have no idea. But you're working 40 hours a week at McDonald's, 40 hours a week, every week of the month, $1,100. Now they've got you a second job making $955. So they've got you working, what, 85 hours? 85 hours a week. And that comes you up with a monthly income of $2,060. So miraculously, you have your 40-hour work week there at McDonald's, and you picked up a 35-hour week job somewhere else. So here you are, you know, 75 hours, almost 80 hours a week. So now they're going to help you budget that $2,060. You're going to put $100 away for savings because you got to save money, right? You're going to pay $600 a month for rent, $150 a month for a car payment. Not quite sure what kind of car you're going to get for $150 a month, but that's what the payment is. Your car / home insurance, $100. If you're driving a beater, that's possible. Health insurance, $20 a month for health insurance. What kind of health plan do you get for $20 a month? Did I miss that? Does McDonald's offer a health care plan for $20 a month? No. Cable, telephone, expenses, $100 a month. Electric, $90 a month. Other, $100 a month. A total monthly expense of $1,260. Monthly spending money, $800 a month. So you could make it. How much you spend on heating? Nothing. Because you just be cold. Now, I'm looking at this, and I'm still hung up on where the hell did the second job come from? And where are you getting health insurance for $20 a month? Just a thought. But again, when the wealth class has spoken, McDonald's and Visa partnered up. It must be our fault, right? And when the Republicans run around the state and hold their little kangaroo hearings, you know who they're going to blame. It's going to be more blame the poor because they didn't work hard enough or they're lazy, kind of like the unemployed. This is another, mark my words, this is another poor bashing. This is more bashing and kicking the victims. This is more of the same. It's just a different person. First it was the unemployed, now it's going to be, I'm telling you, this is going to happen. And it's a damn shame. Going to take a quick break, right back, stick around. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, right back. Take your money, all they want to do is, and I,
listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU, financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth. Sky.
Researchers have learned that the toxins that make snake venom deadly can evolve back into completely harmless molecules.
This discovery could lead to new drugs for life-threatening conditions including cancer, diabetes, and high blood pressure.
The toxins in snake venom evolve in a special gland in the snake's body. They start out as harmless compounds that have been doing different jobs elsewhere for the snake. In fact, a snake's venom gland appears to be a melting pot, a place for evolving new functions for molecules. Some of these molecules are retained in venom for killing the snake's prey. Others go on to serve new functions in other tissues in the body.
The idea that there are many harmless versions of venom toxins throughout a snake's body suggests a new avenue of drug development. Ex-venom compounds might be valuable because they're made up of what scientists call bioactive proteins, which already are naturally designed to target metabolic processes. And that's precisely what you need drugs to do.
So studies of deadly snake venom might lead to better human health. These scientists published their study in the journal Nature Communications in late 2012. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. For more stories about the human world, visit us at earthsky.org and follow Earth Sky Science on Twitter.
Search snake venom at earthsky.org for more on this story. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
If the federal government continues to do the kinds of things that this administration is trying to do through the back door, through the National Labor Relations Board, that's killing our free market system.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
The NLRB has become a political sycophant for labor unions.
And one of the things the Congress should do immediately is defund the National Labor Relations Board.
It seems to me that what we're seeing is a ceding of power from Congress to these, to the NLRB and other agencies.
Really is a freedom versus tyranny issue.
I'm a member of the GOP, trying to form a plutocracy, but if I can just bamboozle you, and you'll share my narrow point of view, what a wonderful world this would be.
Ah, yes, what a wonderful world, what a wonderful world indeed. If you're just willing to work for company script, that was one of the things that, you know, as we did our tour that I came across a lot when you talk to some of these miners who a lot of them remember, you know, their parents or grandparents talking about company script. And, you know, I see it coming back. And in fact, Jack wrote me an email just in the break, that pointed out that the practicalmoneyskills.com website that I pointed people to, I didn't see this when I looked it over. I was just looking at the guide that they had, you know, the sample budget that they put forth that said, you know, $20 a month for health care. Who the hell pays $20 a month for health care? And, you know, the miraculous second job. I was literally taken by the second job. But as Jack points out, the website, and duh, I didn't think of it, a perfect marriage between McDonald's and Visa. No more paychecks. Pay cards. Brilliant. Pay cards. No more bother with paychecks. And I love how they sell it. Oh, you don't need to have, you don't need to have a bank account. No. No credit checks. You don't need any of that. You have immediate access to your money on payday. You know, kind of like when you had a paycheck, it was in your hands. Yeah. Multiple ways to access your money. Free. And if you lose your card, you can get a replacement anytime from your manager. Oh, yeah. I see that happening. But, you know, I love it. You know, this is a way for now Visa to get in people's pockets, too. What a beautiful corporate marriage. What a wonderful world it will be when we don't have to worry about government. Oh, it'll be so good when we get that pesky regulation out of our lives so our corporate masters can bring us freedom. Freedom to have a pay card and a second job. And I guess I'm just hung up on that. That, you know, hey, we admit fully that there is no way in hell you're ever going to be able to eke out an existence to make a living working 40 hours a week for us. Ever. You're going to need that second job making almost as much. And I wonder who came up with the idea that it would just be $150 less for the second job. I wonder whose brilliant idea that was. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast, Stitcher on the smartphone. You can email me anytime, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Back with hour two from the studio here in Harrisburg. We're right back.
Oh, 90% of the world. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Oh, 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
In May, workers at a Guitar Center store in Manhattan voted to join the retail, wholesale, and department store union. That vote has inspired workers at a Guitar Center store in Chicago to make an attempt to do the same. Brian Webb is one of the employees seeking to organize the Chicago Music Instrument Store. He's been at the store for 7 years.
I really considered staying with Guitar Center, you know, for a long time, and I love the job, I love the people, I love the atmosphere.
Webb said he's not the only Guitar Center employee who would like to make a living doing the work they love.
You know, in our store, there's multiple people that, you know, have wives and kids and families. And, you know, these are, you know, high school kids, you know, working for a little extra cash. You know, these are people that have lives and, you know, depend on this job. And, you know, to be essentially paying people minimum wage plus, you know, the ability to make a little bit more if you're lucky or if you're, you know, if you hit the right numbers this month or next month or whatever, is just not enough. I mean, anybody that works 40 hours a week and is loyal to their job and does a good job should be comfortable. And that's a very firm belief that I have.
In a petition, the workers say problems at Guitar Center started when the company was taken over by Bain Capital, with non-sales employees barely earning more than minimum wages and raises becoming scarce. California's Bay Area could be seeing a second transit strike if a deal isn't reached by August 4th. One of the most contentious issues in negotiations remains the rising cost of health care placed on the back of workers. Currently, bar workers pay $95 per month for health care and 1.67% of each paycheck toward retirement. The most recent contract proposal would see the insurance costs for workers rise until they peak at 10% in 4 years. Workers with families would see the amount they're paying into health care double without the necessary wage increases to make up for the monthly loss. The workers were originally seeking an increase of 23% over 4 years, but management is instead proposing 8% over 4 years. The workers have been under a pay freeze for the last 5 years, a concession they agreed to during the recession. Union officials have said that when all of those pieces of the puzzle are factored together, under management's proposal, workers' wages would actually be 3 or 4% lower than they were 5 years ago. City of Oakland workers could see their first wage increases since 2007. Under a deal reached between the city and two unions representing workers, there could be a 2% pay raise retroactive to the first of this month, an additional 1% in July of 2014.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Last year, 120,000 people over the age of 60 in the United States of America had their Social Security payments garnished because of student loan debt. It is a multi-generational crisis. And anybody who has, you know, sweated over their sons and daughters' student loan payments knows that it's not just about students. It's about all of us.
All right, well, let's get to it. Welcome back to the second hour of the Rick Smith Show. Let's get to the weekend. You know, ruined my Saturday night. I get a bunch of people calling, a bunch of emails. Not guilty. You know what I say to not guilty? Not surprised. Anybody who was following it knew the prosecution did a horrible job. Good lawyers, good big money, big outcome, much better lawyers. They were outclassed. Bottom line. But here's the thing. It didn't take long. I guess we're going to call her B-37, for juror B-37 to sign a book deal. Didn't take long at all. In fact, there's part of me that goes, they've probably been negotiating for quite some time, regardless of what the deal was. Although, you know, a guilty verdict wouldn't have gotten a much better book. I think the not guilty verdict was, and this is something I wish someone would look into this dealing. Were there conversations? The trial was going on with the husband, who's an attorney. Her husband, actually, an attorney. It's kind of interesting. You gotta wonder if he was having negotiations with this publishing company, Martin Literary Management. They're the folks who published the book by the ex-boyfriend of Amanda Knox and the SEAL Team 6 book. They've represented people there. So you kind of got to wonder. And I love what the woman who is the publishing company owner, what she said. She said that her hope is that people will read Juror B-37's book written by her attorney husband and understand the commitment it takes to serve and be sequestered on a jury in a highly publicized, you know, highly publicized murder trial. And how important, despite one's personal views, it is to follow the law. The reader will also learn why the jurors had no option but to find Zimmerman not guilty due to the manner in which he was charged and the content of jury instructions. I was kind of, when I saw the story that manslaughter was being thrown on the table, to me that was kind of one of those things where you go, I'm kind of thinking that the prosecution knows that their case is in the tank, and they got to salvage something, and that was thrown out last minute. Hey, let's get something. I thought that when that was thrown out, that was a possibility. I knew second degree was never going to happen, not with a jury in Florida, not with that insane law being a justification. I was interested in some of the reaction. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, said that, he said, I think our justice system is colorblind. I don't think so, but, you know, you can believe that. You had a Fox News host agreeing that the Black Panthers caused the Zimmerman trial, which you understand, you know, Fox News sees everything's the Black Panthers because that scares white people. So like I said, the Zimmerman not guilty, not surprised. In fact, I would have been surprised if he'd have been found guilty. For me, it's time to rethink the law and to do away with this insanity. And, you know, as I was talking about this with my wife over the weekend, I remembered vividly an incident when I was an 18-year-old kid. We were, you know, just a couple of us were joyriding, and, you know, slowly, you know, we were just, you know, listening to music, you know, kind of having a good time, and we were being obnoxious, I'm sure. But in a slow way, you know, probably doing 25 and a 35, and the guy behind us was just enraged. And he's in the car with his wife. So we turn the corner, he comes out, he gives us the finger, and he's doing all this stuff. And I think one of my buddies, you know, saluted him back, which sent him even further into a rage. And at the next red light, he jumps out of the car. And he comes running back at me, because I was driving. And I went to get out of the car, and he slammed the door on my head, pinning my head between the car, the roof and the car door, and which really kind of made me mad. In fact, at that point, I went from smiling and joking around to equally raging. Now, as an 18-year-old kid, probably in the best shape of my life, you know, benching well over 300 pounds, you know, in really good shape, I quickly dispensed of this, you know, guy in his 40s who at one point, yeah, I look at myself now and I'm going, that's me. You know, he was well past his prime, as, you know, I am now. And he punched me a couple of times, and I whipped him to no end. And he's in the middle of the street on his hands and knees, and I'm kicking him in the behind. I'm not proud of that, but it's what happened. And his wife is standing there, and I guess this is the difference of what, you know, 20, 25, 30 years will be. She's standing there going, you dumb, you know what? I told you not to get out of the car. What are you doing? Get back in the car. And she verbally abused him all the way back into the car. And we ended it. It stopped. As soon as he gave up, I stopped. I went back to the car, and we were done. That situation today, he jumps out of the car. He hits me in my head between the car door. I kick his behind. He shoots me. That's what came out of this for me. The lesson in this for me is if I want to kill somebody, I start a fight with them, I let them beat the tar out of me, and then I shoot them. Because it's self-defense. Or as Ted Nugent said, the most pure case of self-defense in, you know, history, the most clear case of self-defense. It wasn't clear at all. This was a guy who picked a fight. And, you know, you can say whatever you want about the scuffle. This was a guy who initiated this altercation. This was a guy who, from all the reports that I've read, all of the stories that you hear about him, this was the neighborhood watch guy. He was top cop in the neighborhood. And, I, you know, having worked security for a number of years, I knew tons of those people who'd get an old broken down old police car and put a scanner in there, and they would put kind of like fake lights so it looked like a cop car. You know those idiots on the highway who get behind you so that you slow down because you think they're a cop car, and they go by and they laugh. We've all seen those people, haven't we? To me, that's this guy. And the fact that he had a gun in his pocket, that made him a tough guy. And this is my problem with people carrying guns. This is my problem with the gun culture. It gives people false bravado. It gives them false machismo. I'm a tough guy now. I got a gun. And even if I start a fight and I get my butt kicked, I got the gun. Yeah, you know, I had a friend who grew up in the South. He said, you know, people in the South have more guns. Makes us much more polite. I go, I completely, fundamentally disagree with that. I think the people in the South are polite. I don't think the gun had anything to do with it. This guy, in my view, and people like him, and I've met a number of people like him. They saw that kid walking down the street and they accosted him. What came out of this trial is that I have the right to stop and question anyone. What about my right to privacy to not be stopped and questioned by anyone?
stop and think about this from a rational point of view. This kid did nothing wrong. Nothing. He was walking down the street with iced tea and Skittles. He was happy on a sugar high. Maybe he was guilty of a sugar high. And that's his mother's problem. But who was it? Who was this guy's right to walk up to him and stop him and say anything to him? I mean, to me, that's the fundamental breakdown of this whole situation. Who in the hell is George Zimmerman or any of those people to where someone's walking down the street not doing anything? What right do you have to stop someone on a public street and question anyone? Because I'll tell you right now, white, black, green, purple, orange, you stop me on the street and you say something, I'm going to tell you where to go. You don't have the right to stop me. You don't have the right to question me. And this kid probably told him what I would have told him. Because I'm sure this kid and other kids in the neighborhood had run-ins with people like him. Or with him. Now here you got this guy. You know, 28, I guess he was 28 at the time, 29, going on 29. Tough guy. Big guy, got a gun. This kid's not going to tell me to go you know where. I'll put him in his place. And then he finds out, uh-oh, this kid's a little bit quicker than I am. This kid's maybe a little bit stronger than I am. And he gets his butt kicked. Should have ended right there. Guy got his butt kicked. Go home, lick your wounds, learn your lesson. Something all of our parents, all of our fathers taught us, right? You go out there, you start a fight, and you get your butt kicked, you got what you deserved, right? Anybody disagree with me? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, because I would love to hear someone say, no, I think I should be able to stop you on the street, put my finger in your face, and accuse you of whatever the hell I want to. It's my right to free speech. I've always said you've got the right to your free speech, and I should have the right to mine, which is to stick my size 13 up your behind, which is where this would have gone had it been me. But what this tells me it's okay. It's okay to stop somebody. It's okay to harass somebody. It's okay. And if you get your butt kicked, you can shoot them. So now I can add that to the, you know, to the ways I can kill people now. You know, as I've said for a while, I can kill someone by employing them. You know, just set up a dangerous situation on the job. They fall, you know, it's faulty equipment. They died. Sorry. And now start a fight with somebody. Let them smack me a couple of times. Oh, I feared for my life. I caused the situation. I started the problem. And I now fear for my life. Have we lost our ever-loving freaking minds? I mean, really. And I love the prosecutor who said what I thought was just probably the dumbest thing a prosecutor could have said. He said, you know, I prayed for, you know, for Zimmerman to testify because I wanted to ask him questions of his inconsistencies in his statement. Look, I'm not a lawyer, probably not the brightest bulb in the box, but I'm smart enough to realize the last thing you do when you're winning a case, as most people were saying this was going, is you put him on the stand. Never. Never. And some of the great questions that he was going to come up with was, one of them, the article, you know, why did you assume because Martin was wearing a hoodie he committed a crime? Oh, that's a biting question. Why did you assume that because he was walking, he was doing something improper? Oh, that, you know, did they teach you that in law school? Now, look, I'm not against neighborhood watches. I'm all in favor of community. Problem is you get some people. a little bit too overzealous. And I still remember a lot of the security guard guys that I met. Really, really very overzealous. When I come back and talk a little bit more about this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm interested in your thoughts, questions, comments. What are your thoughts of this not guilty verdict? Right back.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
America the beautiful. America the greatest. We're number one, right? Absolutely, naturally, and indisputably. At least, that's the theocratic pronouncement of far-right-wing nativists who are presently putting forth a dogma of American exceptionalism, using the concept as a not-to-be-questioned litmus test of you're-in-my patriotism. Never mind that on many crucial issues of national achievements, our good old U.S. of A. has slipped a bit in recent years, and a simple-minded assertion that we're number one doesn't make it so. For example, in the annual rate of educational improvement, a bedrock indicator of a nation's future ability to thrive, the U.S. has tumbled to 25th. Say it loud and say it proud, we're number 25. Not only does that place us behind such education powerhouses as Germany, but also behind Latvia, Portugal, and Slovenia. Yes, America remains one of the world's richest nations, yet our wealth is more concentrated in the hands of a rich elite than nearly every other nation. China has more democratic distribution of riches than our society does. So does Bangladesh, the Congo, Haiti, Mexico, Nigeria, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and all but six other countries. Healthcare? We're only 38th and dead last among wealthy democracies. Our tax code is the least progressive in the industrialized world. The quality of America's infrastructure ranks a poor 25th, and in a category that not long ago was a source of great national strength and pride, the wealth of our middle class has fallen below that of 26 other nations. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the past century, America became great not by merely believing in some hocus-pocus exceptionalism, but by achieving greatness through deliberate and determined public investments in the common good. And that's our path back to being number one.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Fox News alert, it's election day. We got some new video we just showed you of a member of the new Black Panther Party standing guard outside a polling place in Philadelphia. I don't know.
Oh, the exact same guy right there. The Black Panther Party. They brought the Zimmerman. They made the Zimmerman case happen. In fact, it was the Black Panthers who made Zimmerman shoot him. It was their fault, along with Obama, of course. And you know, today was amazing to me. If you watched the mainstream corporate control media frenzy that went on around this, off the same script, every one of the outlets that I turned to, the exact same thing, the exact same talking points. Obama made the trial happen because he said,
if I had a son, he'd look a lot like the kid. And it was, you know, it was those black athletes like the Miami Heat, who I got to be honest, I despise the Heat. I despise LeBron James, not him personally, but what he did leaving Cleveland. But their picture with them wearing hoodies, they're the problem. Right down the list, it was the Black Panthers who made it happen. It was an overzealous prosecutor. The guy killed somebody. And what's interesting to me is, and, you know, I wish one of my gun friends would call and explain to me how it is that he got a gun. Should he have had a gun in the first place? Here's a guy who was arrested for resisting arrest, resisting an officer with violence. That's what he was arrested for in 2005. Then he was arrested again in 2005, actually for domestic violence. And it had a protection order against him, a restraining order against him for domestic violence. How does someone like that get a gun? And should they have it? You know, I guess the question then starts becoming, you know, if we're going to be this gun society, should we decide a little more judiciously what crimes, what mental behaviors warrant saying, hey, you know what? I don't know that we want somebody to... who's going to use the gun indiscriminately to have it. To me, this was indiscriminately. He saw this kid walking down the street. He said, you know what? I'm going to go screw with that kid. I don't know, and I don't believe that he had intended from the beginning to shoot the kid. But had he not had the gun, he'd have just gotten his butt whipped. And you know what? As my grandfather always said, sometimes you got to make a citizen out of somebody. They just need a good smack across the back of the head to loosen up the marbles. Maybe that would have straightened him out. Maybe. And, you know, I think back to my grandparents' generation. You know, what would my grandfather have said? He said the guy deserved to get his butt kicked. Deserved it. The kid shouldn't have gotten shot and killed over it. But you look at this and you go, well, should he have even had the gun? And I don't know. I don't think so. And you pointed out, I read an article that over the last couple of years, over the last several years, here's a guy who made 46 calls to this little police department. Reporting, you know, those black males, suspicious activity. How many white males did he report? I'm just curious. Ben sent me an email with some interesting statistics. Pointed out that, and I'm not sure where he gets these statistics from. He doesn't point that out, but he says, you know, a black male born in 2001 has a 32% chance of spending some portion of his life in prison, whereas a white male born the same year has just a 6% chance. In the email, he points out that in majority American cities, as many as 80% of young African American men have a criminal record. And you go down through and you go, why? Well, high poverty areas. You know, when you're hungry, you're going to do what you have to do. To me, it's the failure of our policies to get into these inner city areas, to get into these high poverty areas and educate and change the culture. We all think that the silver bullet, and it goes back to charter schools, it goes back to busing, it goes back to all of the waste of opportunity that we've wasted. These kids' lives that we've thrown away because, oh, well, we need to make a profit out of it. Ben also points out that African Americans who use drugs are 4 times more likely to be incarcerated than whites who use drugs. Of course, because they can't afford lawyers. He points out that in 7 states, African Americans constitute 80% or more of all drug offenders sent to prison. And you go, well, that's because they're doing the drugs. And tell me white kids aren't doing drugs? Come on. Points out that black students are 3.5 times as likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers. Yeah, that's not surprising. Black youths are referred to juvenile courts much more likely to be detained, referred to adult courts, or end up in adult prison than their white counterparts. Again, not surprising. Ben also points out that the United States imprisons a larger percentage of its black population than South Africa did at the height of apartheid. And again, none of that seems overly surprising to me, because we're talking about people who are in poverty. And to me, you know, when we did our trip and we went to Memphis and, you know, we saw the place where Dr. King was assassinated, where he was murdered. And you know, I thought about, you know, why was he there? Why was he in Memphis? What took him to Memphis? Well, he was there to support striking workers who wanted to have a decent wage, decent job conditions, decent benefits. And, you know, to this day, those sanitation workers that he died for still don't have pensions. In fact, while we were in Memphis, we found out that one of the guys working on the garbage truck there, 70-some years old, died on the job because he doesn't have a pension, didn't have the ability to retire, because they're not well paid. And this fallacy that, oh, you know, these public sector workers, these state workers, they have gilded pensions. They make too much money. Give me a break. You know, as I was thinking about why King was there, it was about poverty. It was about making sure that work pays, making sure that people can make it, have an existence, so that you don't have high poverty areas where you have all of the societal ills that come along with poverty. The drug abuse, the crime, the violence. You know, I told my wife, you know, when we first started dating, I never thought I'd make it to 30. You know, where I grew up, you know, you didn't see many people over 30 because they either were whisked away to prison or they ended up getting killed. And as I go back and I think about that period of my life, I was just a kid. I was just a young kid, you know, observing this stuff. I think about today. I mean, the drug problem was not horrible when I was a kid. Yeah, you had a couple of things. You had weed. You had the LSD, thanks to the CIA that came back from Vietnam. You had those things, and you had a lot of booze. But you didn't have the drugs that they've got today. That, you know, one whatever, and you're hooked. You look at some of these crack people. I mean, it's a sickness. And the drug trade has permeated the poverty areas because it's seen as the only way now to make a living. And I look at, you know, at some of the inner cities with the drug trade, much like I when we went to Blair, West Virginia, where there are people walking around with sidearms trying to intimidate us about talking about coal. I think it's the exact same thing. You're grasping on to what the only thing that you're being given. The only opportunity to stay out of poverty that you're given. And you're going to defend it, and you're going to fight for it, and you're going to do what you can. Is it right? Is it wrong? It's seen as a means to feed the family. It's seen as a means to keep a roof over the head. And it's only getting worse, folks. Especially as, you know, I look at our House Republicans here, who are going to have their great listening tour on poverty issues. And you know what it's going to turn into. You know it's going to turn into finger pointing at the people who are the victims of bad policy, at the victims of the people who are the victims of unregulated laissez-faire capitalism. You know that's where the fingers are going. Much like the fingers were pointed at the unemployed. Not at bad trade policies, not at bad banking policies, not at bad government policies brought to us by the Reagans and the right-wing conservatives and some idiotic Democrats who bought into it. It's going to be blame those people who are unable to defend themselves. And, you know, I go back to that period, and I remember looking into the eyes and seeing the hope gone, seeing nothing but despair, And I particularly remember those guys who came back from Vietnam who were just dumped. Dumped like trash. Something I had hoped that I would never see again. And as I look around, and I see the policies that the ideological right wing, the people who call themselves conservatives, which I don't know that I see any true conservatives anymore. I see radical ideologues. I see people hell-bent on pain. I see people hell-bent on punishment, on retribution. I see people who are hell-bent on finger-pointing and blame. Because do we still have a transportation bill? Is there one floating around that I missed? We were gone over a month. Did I miss the transportation bill? Did I miss a jobs bill? Did I miss education funding? Did I miss something that was going to make conditions better? No, I didn't miss that. And you know I didn't. It's sad, sad stuff. And it's going to take you, and it's going to take me, and it's going to take people hitting the ballot boxes. It's going to have people like you and me running for office. Enough of these hand-picked handmaidens of the wealth class, enough of the people who can get the campaign contributions from the huge corporations running things, enough already. You know, for me, when I see all the television ads and I see all of the flossy, glossy flyers coming to the house, I'm going, who paid for that? Where'd that come from? You know, as the old man said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. Because they understand return on investment. And that's always stuck with me. Because they didn't get to be rich being stupid. They got to be rich by investing in a sure thing. And when they invest in these politicians on both sides of the aisle, they know it's a sure thing. We'll take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Curious your thoughts, questions, comments. Right back.
Me and my people are ready. Me and my people are just about due. I'm a massive air strike on a beautiful night. Yeah, it's my song I'm singing. Somebody better start counting. We're coming out. We're coming out.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
Researchers have learned that the toxins that make snake venom deadly can evolve back into completely harmless molecules.
This discovery could lead to new drugs for life-threatening conditions including cancer, diabetes, and high blood pressure.
The toxins in snake venom evolve in a special gland in the snake's body. they start out as harmless compounds that have been doing different jobs elsewhere for the snake. In fact, a snake's venom gland appears to be a melting pot, a place for evolving new functions for molecules. Some of these molecules are retained in venom for killing the snake's prey. Others go on to serve new functions in other tissues in the body.
The idea that there are many harmless versions of venom toxins throughout a snake's body suggests a new avenue of drug development. Ex-venom compounds might be valuable because they're made up of what scientists call bioactive proteins, which already are naturally designed to target metabolic processes. And that's precisely what you need drugs to do.
So studies of deadly snake venom might lead to better human health. These scientists published their study in the journal Nature Communications in late 2012. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. For more stories about the human world, visit us at earthsky.org and follow EarthSky Science on Twitter.
Search snake venom at earthsky.org for more on this story. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a New Deal initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America.
Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said that the NLRB is a four-letter word in North Carolina, or in South Carolina. It's four letters, yeah. I agree. Four letters, got it. NLRB, one, four, yeah. I can come up with some five-letter words. Idiot, moron, doofus, all apply to senator from South Carolina. I mean, think about this now. And stones. Maybe Harry Reid's going to grow a couple. Because he's saying, and the negotiations and the battling are going on right now, do the appointments. Get people into the jobs that need to be done. You know, I look at this, and they still have no one to head up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They have no one to head up the Department of Labor. They are missing people on the NLRB. And when I look at this, it's not about getting qualified people to sit in those positions. It's about making government dysfunctional. It's about blocking appointments for the entire government department so that they cannot function. It's not because they don't think that the person's qualified. They haven't even looked at the qualifications of the nominees. Nothing. This is simply about throwing a wrench into the wheels of government and grinding it to a halt. Since 2007, the Republicans have undertaken 420 filibusters. Since 2007. Now, during the same span of time, when LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, was the majority leader in the Senate. During the same time, from 2007 till now, the same time LBJ was the majority leader. Reid, 420. LBJ,
one. And I'm at the point where, and I'm going to have to check this, but I think we've got to be coming close to the Republicans just in the last couple of years undertaking more filibusters than we've had in the entire history of the United States. And again, I go back to, it's not about where these are bad nominees or these people aren't qualified. It's simply about how we can destroy government. Because what we've heard, and you know, this is the Reagan dream realized. All we've heard is, well, you know, government's bad. And you got all these Tea Party idiots running around going, government's bad, we got to destroy government. The same calls, you know, you remember back in the late 80s, early 90s when they were calling for the end of the IRS, get rid of the IRS, and they were calling for, you know, destroying government? Well, we're living that Reagan dream. And as Elizabeth Warren pointed out today, by filibustering the nominees that Obama has put forth, all they've produced is dysfunctional government. She said, I'm new to the Senate, but I don't understand why this body accepts a system where this kind of political stalemate won't end in more government or less government, just in bad government. And this is where she's right. Government that lacks a consistency, clarity, and predictability that honest businesses and hardworking families need to plan, there's something wrong with this. We need someone who's going to be the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. But the Republicans are against it. We need someone to sit on to be the head of the Labor Department. The Republicans are against the department. So what they're going to do is they're going to defund and destroy. I mean, I got to be honest with you. At some point, don't we have to wake up and point the finger squarely where it belongs to the people who have done this? You know, I go back to the grand tour that the House Republicans here in Pennsylvania talk about. They said today that they're going to do, and it was pointed out to me that it's not actually a listening tour. It was pointed out to me that they've actually not had any hearing dates. They're not going to do hearings, I guess. And we're going to be checking into this because I didn't see the hearing dates either. And I was figuring, well, they'll come out later. They're going to hold kangaroo hearings where they'll maybe pretend like they're listening. I'm told they're not even going to pretend like they're listening. They're going to have closed door meetings with different advocacy groups. And I would have to guess, having, you know, had a moment or two to rethink this, that it's just going to be the same characters. The nonprofits that, well, make a lot of money profiting off of the poor, that haven't done a lot to do away with poverty, but, you know, they pay their CEOs nicely. And, of course, those charities. Because we're going to hear a lot about how, you know, the churches, we need the churches more. And I'm not against the churches helping. They just don't do an effective job. Sorry. And we're going to hear more tough love, I think. We're going to hear more about, oh, well, you know, we need to get those people off the food stamps and off the welfare. Get them back to work. Get those lazy people. Which is why I found it interesting last week that the farm bill that the Republicans passed stripped out the SNAP, the Supplementary Nutrition Assistance Program. Just took it right out. Because, you know, those poor people, they don't need food. You know, the 1.8 million people here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania who needed that food help, you know, the 725,000 children, you know, the program that worked exactly as it was supposed to when the economy collapsed, you know, the thing that saved us from depression. It's amazing to me that you get these Republicans who now turn around and go, you know, that unemployment, those food stamps, that Social Security, that Medicare, that Medicaid, all of those programs that stopped us from a depression, those are the problems now? Are you getting this? Are you seeing what they're spewing? We've got 1.8 million people in this Commonwealth who needed food stamps. They tell me that twice that number are actually in need. Now, we're doing a horrible job getting the help to the people who need it. And that's because you've got the folks over here in Harrisburg who've set up systems that put major obstacles in the way. You got people in D.C. who put up major obstacles in the way. Now, here's the thing. The House passed their version of the Farm Bill that strips out the SNAP program. The Senate's already passed a Farm Bill, has the SNAP program in it. As I understand, if the House does, and I guess if this passes this way, and maybe this is the thinking, that you're going to have to have a conference, you're going to have markup, and you're going to have some compromise between the Senate and the House bill, which the House, I don't know, is going to go for a compromise that takes SNAP out of the Farm Bill. And if you, I guess, as I'm looking down the road, it's going to make larger cuts even more possible down the road if you are able to separate it out. And there's part of me that looks at this and says, they know they're never going to get the SNAP taken out. They know they're never going to get what they want. So by grinding the wheels to a halt and passing nothing, nothing happens. This is a Republican Party who's figured out the flaw in our government system. And the flaw is that, and I guess, you know, Madison was right. I guess, you know, if you read Federalist 10, where they talk about factions, a faction of the Republican Party, these T-twits, these ideologues, these radicals who have infected the Republican Party, they have grinded this country to a halt. We couldn't pass food stamps. We couldn't pass unemployment. We couldn't pass a jobs bill. We couldn't pass a major infrastructure bill. We couldn't go to the moon. We couldn't do any of those things right now because our politics are so dysfunctional because the Republicans have been infested by radicals. The party has been infested by radicals. And the reality is kids today much worse off than when I was a kid. And we lived in what I considered abject poverty in this country. And as I said earlier, when you look at the Great Society programs, when you look at, yeah, things are almost as bad as they were back in the 60s. You're right. If you look at it from just now and back in the 60s, poverty rates are about the same. But if you look at that middle part, before Reagan, poverty was going down. And then just in the last 10 years, poverty has risen. 22% of American kids now live below in low-income housing. 22%. That's up from just 16% just 10 years ago. More kids now are living in households where they call food insecure. Nearly a quarter of the kids in this country live in houses that are food insecure. And you go back and you look at those programs. And you go, who destroyed them? And I go back to one phrase. Ronald Reagan, ketchup is a vegetable. One of his rationales for destroying the school lunch programs, because ketchup's a vegetable. They can let them eat ketchup. Sad stuff. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. Whoop.
class majority. Rick Smith.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner era, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9. Ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitative use of child labor, was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
I got to be honest, you know, the whole 1,000 year of darkness thing. I'm looking at this Zimmerman trial, and, you know, as more things come out, as more information from the jurors come out, one, maybe we need to have some oversight of what goes on in these jury rooms. You know, some of the information coming out, oh, well, you know, we were emotional about Zimmerman. Oh, I felt sorry for him. Oh, you know, we ruled because of the stand your ground law, not because it was actually self-defense. Wow. Got my book deal. I wonder how many other book deals are going to come out of this. I wonder how much of the media circus, and I guess it's the frenzy that's gone on, and we make these little stars for 15 minutes that, you know, maybe that's part of it. I don't know. I'm just a really very, very bizarre situation where I still think justice was not served, but at the end of the day, it is the law, you know. The Constitution was set up that 1,000 men go free. If then, you know, one innocent man go to jail. So here's one of the 1,000 that I think went free. So blame it on the framers if you want. It'll be interesting to see where Eric Holder goes with this. He did say that, you know, Martin's death was unnecessary. Means in the means of a possible civil trial. Which is, you know, how they got the guys who beat up Rodney King. So, which amazed me. You know, I looked at, you remember the Rodney King beating? I don't know how you could look at that and go, well, you know, that wasn't excessive. Well, it just was what it was. Interesting news from Missouri. We were in Missouri not too long ago on the People's Tour for America. And on Friday, the governor of Missouri signed into law what they say is a public safety bill
that first graders will be able to enroll in the NRA-sponsored gun class, active shooter and intruder response training. Also going to give money for financial grants for the NRA's Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program. And to be honest, I'm not against teaching kids to get away from a gun and to, what to do if you come across one. I think that's something that the parents should have done as well, but I'm not against it. But I do kind of have a weird feel about Eddie the Eagle, which has been reported as Joe Camel with feathers. When gun advocates are having, mascots, I don't know, I'm a little weird about that. But the advice is good, I guess, when you see a gun, stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult. Yeah, I get it. That seems pretty interesting. For me, though, you look at the gun, the gun coloring books and the way into our schools, I have a problem with that. But you go to places like Missouri where, hey, we can talk about guns, but we can't talk about working conditions. We can't teach labor history. No, we can't actually talk about history. No, bad, bad. Because, those kids are going to grow up to be workers, and they need to be in line. We don't need them to actually think. That would be a bad thing. Anyway, Greg sent me an interesting email during the last break. He said, Rick, love the show. You probably already know here in Talibandiana, which I guess is Indiana, they passed right to work for nothing law several months ago by our former governor, Mitch Daniels. Over the past couple of years, I've been looking for a position in the industrial or warehouse field. Now, if it isn't enough of a hassle finding either something with a living wage or, God forbid, a job that isn't temporary, then right to work for nothing has reared its ugly head again. He says this time, it's a soaring rise in the swing shift jobs. He said that has been filling up on the internet job boards since these right-to-wing passed the God-forbidden piece of legislation. He says, forget about working two or three jobs, Rick, like I've done in the past. How about working just one low-paying job with temporary with no benefit swing shift job with absolutely no way of working a part-time job because of the different hours and days that you'd be working? And that's the thing. When we talk to people who went on strike, the Fast Food Forward and, the other campaigns going on in Chicago and New York and St. Louis and Milwaukee and all across the country where these fast food workers are going, enough is enough. One of their main gripes, one of their main arguments is, look, we can't get that second job that McDonald's and Visa on their website say we have to have in order to survive. And check it out, really, practicalmoneyskills.com. Amazing, amazing stuff. Boy, condescending is all hell and propaganda at its worst. But look, with the swing shifts, with the varying hours, with the varying days, they all said the same thing. We don't ever know week to week they change our shifts, they change hours, they change our days off, sometimes last minute. We come in, they send us home. All of these complaints. How are you going to work a second job? And Greg's right. You're looking at all these swing shift jobs, and I've looked. How are you going to work a second job? He says, try working a part-time job with a swing shift job. It's like trying to hit a moving target with a slingshot, he writes. And he said, where is our dearest beloved Mitch Daniels now? He says, well, he's the president of Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, where he says racist hate crimes have skyrocketed through the roof, and not one time has Mitch addressed that in the local media. I got to tell you look at this, and it's mind-blowing. I got to take a quick break, top of the hour. Back with the third hour. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
In May, workers at a Guitar Center store in Manhattan voted to join the retail, wholesale, and department store union. That vote has inspired workers at a Guitar Center store in Chicago to make an attempt to do the same. Brian Webb is one of the employees seeking to organize the Chicago Music Instrument Store. He's been at the store for 7 years.
I really considered staying with Guitar Center, for a long time, and I love the job, I love the people, I love the atmosphere.
Webb said he's not the only Guitar Center employee who would like to make a living doing the work they love.
You know, in our store, there's multiple people that, have wives and kids and families. And, these aren't high school kids, working for a little extra cash. These are people that have lives and depend on this job. And, to be essentially paying people minimum wage plus, the ability to make a little bit more if you're lucky or if you're, if you hit the right numbers this month or next month or whatever, is just not enough. I mean, anybody that works 40 hours a week and is loyal to their job and does a good job should be comfortable. And that's a very firm belief that I have.
In a petition, the workers say problems at Guitar Center started when the company was taken over by Bain Capital, with non-sales employees barely earning more than minimum wages and raises becoming scarce. California's Bay Area could be seeing a second transit strike if a deal isn't reached by August 4th. One of the most contentious issues in negotiations remains the rising cost of health care placed on the back of workers. Currently, BART workers pay $95 per month for health care and 1.67% of each paycheck toward retirement. The most recent contract proposal would see the insurance costs for workers rise until they peak at 10% in 4 years. Workers with families would see the amount they're paying into health care double without the necessary wage increases to make up for the monthly loss. The workers were originally seeking an increase of 23% over 4 years, but management is instead proposing 8% over 4 years. The workers have been under a pay freeze for the last 5 years, a concession they agreed to during the recession. Union officials have said that when all of those pieces of the puzzle are factored together, under management's proposal, workers' wages would actually be 3 or 4% lower than they were 5 years ago. City of Oakland workers could see their first wage increases since 2007. Under a deal reached between the city and two unions representing workers, there could be a 2% pay raise retroactive to the first of this month, an additional 1% in July of 2014.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guess what? The majority of the American people believe we should have a gold standard, not a paper standard.
Pink fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows. Pink fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows. Pink fluffy unicorns.
Oh, yes, Alan West. Pink fluffy unicorn right there. He was asked by the people at Talk Radio News Service about the verdict down in Florida. And you would expect something, outrageous. You would expect something. There's a clear-cut case of self-defense, and I... His response is, well, what do you want me to say? He says it's a really big deal is the unemployment rate in the black community. Teen pregnancy. That was going to be hard to prove. He said, That's it. And you know what? I got to be honest with him. I agree with you. You know what's a big deal? Is the unemployment rate in the black community? Is the teen pregnancy rate? Is the high school dropout rates in high poverty areas? I think that's a huge deal. I think the fact that the black community, the poverty community of white America as well, was so badly hit by the foreclosure crisis, by the housing bubble, that the people who had so little to lose lost so much. Yeah, I think that's a big problem
but this is still a bad decision. And here's the reality. This was a bad piece of legislation. These stand your ground laws, a bad idea from the beginning. I mean, to me, this, I've always believed that, you know, you use deadly force as a last resort. And we've been heading down a very bizarre path for the last several years. We've been following a shoot first, ask questions, the Dirty Harry mentality. Which, if I get this right, all I have to do is be afraid. All I have to do is say, I was afraid. I was afraid they were going to break into my house. I was afraid that they were going to do whatever. And I can get away with it. I mean, think about this for a second. You go, remember, does the name Joe Horn ring a bell? Anybody remember Joe Horn? Joe Horn was the guy down in Texas. And I've got the audio clip somewhere, but he was the guy down in Texas who's on the phone with the 911 operator, and he's watching, you know, two guys walk out of his neighbor's house with their stuff. Criminals. Absolutely. Should go to jail. In fact, should be beaten in public, as far as I'm concerned. He's on the phone with this 911 operator who's saying, look, the police are on the way. They're going to get these guys. They're on the way. They're going to be there in just a minute. They're not getting away. You just stay right where you are. You tell me what's going on. You stay where you are. The guy's going, no, I got a gun. I am going to kill those guys. That's what he said. He said on the phone, I'm going to kill those guys. He goes out. He shoots the both of them in the back in his neighbor's yard. He's acquitted. Was he right? Some would say yes. Was it excessive? I say yes. Is it a violation of the two who were shot in the back civil rights? I'd say yes. That constitutional right to life? And I look at this case. This guy starts an altercation. He starts it. Gets his behind kick, shoots the guy in the back. And I look at the case that's going on right now in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, because jurors were selected today in the case of a 76-year-old white guy who shot a 13-year-old black kid. And this is the same kind of Zimmerman situation. White guy carrying a gun. Walks up and confronts a black teenager. Puts his finger in his face, says, I know you broke into my house, stole my guns. Causes the confrontation. Now, the people are saying that the two cases are nothing alike other than a white guy shot a black kid. I'm saying that the confrontation links them. The fact that these two white guys, for the most part, felt empowered to go up and to confront a black teen who was doing nothing but walking down the street, doing nothing illegal. Makes an accusation, puts the finger in the face, and shoots the kid from a couple of feet away. In fact, shoots him twice, I guess. So now he's going to stand trial. And it doesn't matter because the guy's dying of lung cancer anyway. But here's the part of this story that grabbed my attention. And I guess it shows me how differently police handle things. The mother of the teenager who was killed in this case in Milwaukee was locked in the back of a police car for an hour while her son was dying on the sidewalk and dying on the way to the hospital. They searched the dead kid, the victim's house. Think about this. They searched the kid who's shot to death, the victim. They searched their house. Do you know what they find? They find nothing. There are no guns. There's nothing there. What do? Well, they arrest the brother on a truancy warrant from a year old. Hey, we got to lock up somebody, right? And yeah, you look at this and you go, really? Now, this guy in Milwaukee is facing first-degree murder charges, intentional homicide. And Wisconsin doesn't have these insane stand-your-ground laws, so he can't claim that, well, that kid was coming after me because he was 5 feet away. So they're going to claim that he was mentally ill, couldn't tell right from wrong. 76-year-old man, couldn't tell right from wrong. I'm hoping. And look, you know, the reality is would I be surprised if this guy got off? Probably not. Probably wouldn't be surprised at all. And I guess it's just been the way our legal system's been going, the way our culture's been going, the way the moneyed interests have been pointing us. Because understand where the stand your ground stuff came from. It came out of the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is their baby. But this isn't the most dangerous of the legislation that they're pushing. They're pushing this insane right to work for nothing laws. They're trying to strip down state renewable energy standards. Because they've partnered with the Heartland Institute. You remember them? Yeah. They've written a piece of model legislation called the Electricity Freedom Act. Yeah, because we don't want that renewable stuff. Kind of like Republicans here in Pennsylvania, the screwing that they did to the solar industry in this state. They single-handedly destroyed thousands of jobs in this state of people who were installing and building solar panels and solar farms. They single-handedly destroyed that industry by allowing the SREC credits to go down to virtually nothing. While in New Jersey, solar is booming. But I guess those aren't real jobs. There are also the ALEC legislation to block paid sick day laws, to block any way for workers to increase their wages, to collectively bargain. And the big one, the one that the wealth class has been behind, well, from the very beginning, this is the point of all of this. You know, the voter suppression laws, that was all ALEC. But the creme de la creme, the piece de resistance, the cherry on the sundae, if you will, is getting rid of the IRS. It's reducing the tax burden for the wealthy while screwing everybody else. It's eliminating income tax. It's eliminating all the taxes that the wealth class pays. Because you hear the rhetoric that they're coming out with. They're saying, oh, we need tax collection, just not from the rich. And we're hearing the rhetoric. Never got a job from a poor man. Not true. Not true at all. Most of the people who are quote-unquote job creators, you know, the small business, because we love talking about small business and how they're the engine of growth in the country, those are poor people. Those are people who aren't much wealthier than the people that are working for them. You know, my uncle, who has done very well for himself over the years, said that when he started his business years ago, he was working 80 hours a week, making less money than the guy that was working for it. That's what happens with small businesses, until they grow. And then as they grow, they use more state resources. They use more of our roads and bridges, our education system. And you know what? They benefit from it. We used to have a society where we believed that the bigger the shoulders, the more water we could carry. Now it's, well, I got big shoulders. I don't want to wear them out. Let the scrawny guys do it. It's nuts. Let's take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Your thoughts, questions, comments. Right back.
uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
America the beautiful, America the greatest. We're number one, right? Absolutely, naturally, and indisputably. At least, that's the theocratic pronouncement of far-right-wing nativists who are presently putting forth a dogma of American exceptionalism, using the concept as a not-to-be-questioned litmus test of you're-in-my patriotism. Never mind that on many crucial issues of national achievements, our good old U.S. of A. has slipped a bit in recent years, and a simple-minded assertion that we're number one doesn't make it so. For example, in the annual rate of educational improvement, a bedrock indicator of a nation's future ability to thrive, the U.S. has tumbled to 25th. Say it loud and say it proud, we're number 25. Not only does that place us behind such education powerhouses as Germany, but also behind Latvia, Portugal, and Slovenia. Yes, America remains one of the world's richest nations, yet our wealth is more concentrated in the hands of a rich elite than nearly every other nation. China has more democratic distribution of riches than our society does. So does Bangladesh, the Congo, Haiti, Mexico, Nigeria, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and all but 6 other countries. Healthcare? We're only 38th and dead last among wealthy democracies. Our tax code is the most progressive in the industrialized world. The quality of America's infrastructure ranks a poor 25th, and in a category that not long ago was a source of great national strength and pride, the wealth of our middle class has fallen below that of 26 other nations. This is Jim Hightower saying, in the past century, America became great not by merely believing in some hocus-pocus exceptionalism, but by achieving greatness through deliberate and determined public investments in the common good. And that's our path back to being number one.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
That's why I started giving these speeches. My job is not only commander-in-chief, but educator-in-chief. And I needed to say to the people, you bet it's tough.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I saw an interesting story from Florida, and a lot of craziness out of Florida. How many people have been to this Barducci's Italian Bistro? It's one of these chain restaurants. Evidently, the one in Winter Park, Florida, went out of business. And they decided that the best way to fire the employees was to text them. And there's been some outrage over, you know, the texting of employees. And I guess, is this how we're going to be treating people in the future? And the answer is, there'll be nothing personal going on. Everything is going to be mechanized. We're mechanizing everything. You're fired. Sorry. And I guess I got to be honest. In Florida, you know, as I thought this thing through, and I'm thinking about being an employer in Florida where, you know, a guy just walked away, you know, from shooting someone in the street that he accosted. Maybe I would kind of think of the same thing, especially if they're not going to get their last paycheck. And maybe, you know, crazy. Just a thought. The article pointed out that Groupon would be honoring all of their coupons.
So I guess there's good news to be had in that, right? Good news, Twinkies are back. The Twinkies are back. Thank goodness. You know, if I had the hallelujah quote, we would be singing hallelujah because the little golden puffs of cream or whatever it is, back on the shelves. And in fact, back and better. The original Twinkie had a 26-day shelf life. The new improved Twinkie, a 45-day shelf life. And, you know, and see, I thought it was 100 years, but 45-day shelf life. And do you know why? Well, this isn't what they're going to tell you, but this is the reason. They used to have 11 plants, systematically dispersed throughout the country to get to market. So you had time to get them to market, and they would still be on the shelf long enough to last and for you to be able to buy them. Now they've only got 4 plants instead of the 11 that are going to make the Twinkies and the donuts or donuts and cupcakes, and they need a longer time to get them to market, so they just up the shelf life. And I wonder who oversees that. I wonder if there's any agency or if they could just make that up. Can you just make up shelf life? Can we just pull a number out of our keister and go, oh, yeah, 45 days? Because I think there's part of me that thinks that they could probably go for 100-year shelf life, since most of us believe that their Twinkies will still be around when the cockroaches roam the earth after we've destroyed it completely. But they've come back with the tagline, the sweetest comeback in the history of ever. I'm not sure what that means, but, you know, hey, that's their tagline. You know what's not coming back? The workers' voice on the job. You know what's not coming back? The wages that those workers, the benefits, the say, all of that, that's gone. And when I go back and I look at this whole hostess situation and how masterfully the corporate elites managed that and managed the messaging, pure brilliance. Because they've got working people and pointing at the workers saying, it's your fault. You asked for too much. You asked for too much money. You asked for health care. You asked for a pension. It's your fault. It's all your fault. You asked for job security. It's your fault. And I find it interesting that we've bought it. I mean, that's the thing that really has gotten under my skin. We bought it. Hostess had about 18,500 people working for it before it filed for bankruptcy. They're saying about 20% of the jobs will be back. And you know they're going to pay lower wages. You know they're not going to pay the same benefits or any of that. This is another example of the hedge funds, the private equity firms, taking a brand, stripping the workers of any livable wage, and profiting from it. Understand that. Before the liquidation, 80% of the workers in the company were unionized. Today, there are none, and there will be none. This is another example of failure upward. These CEOs failed time and time again, and they got nice bonuses. They did all right for themselves. If you remember, and I talked about this extensively as it was going on, the CEO imposed a pay cut across the board for all Hostess employees. Because, you know, we've got to cut costs, right? But himself, he was exempt. In fact, his pay went up a couple 100%. And once the bankruptcy hit, they asked the judge to approve something like almost $2 million in bonuses for the executives. Because, you know, we needed to have those retention bonuses because those are the people who know how to run the company into the ground. And I look at this and I go, you know, mission accomplished, right? I mean, isn't that what this really is? Industry after industry, company after company getting away with shedding decent paying middle class jobs. That's what it's all about. And us blaming each other for it. And what I find amazing And I've asked some people who I think should know or have the ability to research this stuff and find out, and ask if there have been any bankruptcies, with the exception of the auto industry, where workers made out okay, not benefited, just made out okay, didn't lose everything. I mean, you look at the Hostess guys, they lost their jobs, they lost their benefits, they lost their pensions, they lost all that stuff, wiped away. Bankruptcy judge said, you know what, no, that's okay. That stuff we can set aside. And what amazes me is that average, everyday working people vote for these Republicans who push these kind of legislation. I got to be honest. You know, I always thought bankruptcy was for people who tried. You put your shingle out, you gave it a go, and it's going to protect you from an absolute fall, from the collapse. But what's going on is these companies have used the bankruptcy laws to screw multiple generations of workers and pit them against one another. And the Hostess situation is just that. They ran that company into the ground. And at the end, the message is going to be, it's the workers' fault. It's much like Bethlehem Steel. The management made horrible, horrible decisions and ran that company into the ground. They didn't invest in steel production. They didn't invest in their industry. They bought hotels and golf courses. They gave themselves huge bonuses. And yet, who do we blame? We blame the workers. Auto industry, the same thing. They made horrible decisions. Horrible decisions. But who do we blame? We're pointed towards the workers. And we live in this culture where we have no problem giving the John Corzines of the world, who is the CEO of MF Global, which I just find hysterical, MF Global. They file bankruptcy. He gets an $8 million bonus. The guy who is the CEO of Citigroup, who resigned, they gave him $6.7 million after he resigned. Even though... he was at the helm when you saw an 88% profit loss in the final quarter when he was at the helm. And the all-time, to me, Robert Nardelli, the all-time golden parachute, $210 million when he was fired. And yet somehow we seem to blame the workers. But we live in this culture where now we're pointing our finger at those people who just want to make a little, like Greg, who sent me the email, who said, you know what? I just want to work a job and support my family. I don't want to work a swing shift and not be able to even work two jobs or three jobs if I have to make ends meet. And I look at the UN. I just saw this thing before the show. The UN is trying to oust the workers there who do the radio and broadcasting stuff, the people who put out the displays, you know, do the sound for when they have the people come in and you know do the work of the UN. Their contract ended June 30th, and now they want to hire yet another contractor. And the people who have been doing the job for years, well, you can reapply. And I love that mentality. See, we really need comprehensive labor law reform in this country. Because you look at the UN, where they've been negotiating for years. They've negotiated in good faith for years on seniority and working conditions and on benefits and, you know, pay and vacation and all of that stuff. And now They see the environment, and they can steal that back. We got to wake up and say no more of this, folks. At some point, enough's enough. There's only so much of you know what we should be willing to eat. And I think, I don't know about you, but I've had my fill. Anyway, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. It's time to talk. We'll be right back.
sellers. Rick Smith.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU, financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
We talk about frivolous lawsuits. You look at this one in Nashville, Tennessee, where a lawyer, a guy named Chris Seaver, he filed a lawsuit against Apple, blaming him for the disillusion of his marriage and the collapse of his mental health. All because Apple, Chris really loves his Apple products, all because Apple didn't put a filter on the Apple devices that kept him from viewing his favorite porn. So, you know, his porn addiction, Apple's fault. I guess it's no one's, nothing's anyone's fault anymore. It's mind-blowing. Anyway, let's go to Washington, D.C., Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, what do you think? It's Apple's fault that he was looking at the ladies, or the boys. Who knows what he was actually looking at? But you know, they're his addiction. It's Apple's fault.
Wow.
I wonder if he'll get anything out of it.
You know, maybe there's some going away money.
And I'm sure his wife will take half.
Oh yes.
And that would be the justice in it. So some, I guess some good news in the Senate. Maybe Harry Reid has grown a set?
Harry Reid has definitely, but I don't know that that's a good thing.
No, you don't think so?
No, I mean, turnabout is fair play, and the Republicans play rough.
Yeah. But at some point, don't you look at this and go, you know, dysfunctional government is, you know, I think it was... Elizabeth Warren, who said, you know, this stalemate doesn't bring us bad or good government. It brings us dysfunctional and broken government.
Yes. No, I think she did say that, and we may get something. Or you never know, we may get a deal tonight. I mean, they may pull back from the brink. There are talks going on to try and avert this disaster. There are talks. I don't know whether they're actually going to yield any results. We may be too far gone, and they may, you know, they may pull the trigger on this thing. I don't know. This could go very late into the night. We may not know until after midnight, and we may not even find out until tomorrow morning on the Senate floor.
Yeah. I am not I'm not a fan of the nuclear option. I understand it. But at some point, the Republicans will regain power. And then they will have that kind of control. I think there's got to be some agreement on what we filibuster, though. You can't filibuster everything.
Right, you can't. But if they change the Senate rules on this, I'm telling you, once the Republicans get into power, they're not going to be content with, oh, yes, we'll just do it on executive branch nominees.
No, I absolutely agree. And this is where I keep saying the voters have to decide, have to know who's holding this up, who's holding the nation hostage. All of these filibusters, I guess the most in history by multiples, and who's doing it.
Yeah, I don't think the public's paying attention to this.
Because we're too busy. We're extraordinarily busy focused on other things, like the Zimmerman thing. I mean, were you surprised by the verdict? I wasn't.
No, I wasn't surprised by the verdict. I don't think the prosecution made a good case. I don't think that they had a very good case. And I am kind of astonished listening to this or seeing the tweets from this juror on CNN who says she believes it was Zimmerman's voice and that she doesn't think that race was a factor and that she thinks that George Zimmerman feared for his life. What does she think that Martin feared for?
Well, he was a thug. He had the hoodie.
You know, the defense was a good lawyer.
Oh, fantastic lawyer. When you have bad prosecutors, this is what you got. Same thing with the OJ trial. I didn't blame OJ on it. Just bad lawyers.
Yeah.
And really good ones for the defense. And, I look at this and, not surprised a bit. But what it tells me is everything that I learned as a kid, that if you start a fight with somebody and you get your behind, my grandfather told me a number of times, you start a fight with somebody and they kick your behind, lick your wounds and move on, learn your lesson. What this has taught me is my grandfather was wrong. If I start a fight, somebody kicks the snot out of me, I can kill them.
Yeah, it does teach you that. You can. You can kill them. Well, it depends who you are. If George Zimmerman had been black, I think he might be doing time now.
Oh, he'd be close to the needle by now. But, as a white guy, I have figured out if I want to kill somebody, there are two surefire ways of getting away with it. One is this way, and the other way is just hire them. Make them my employee. They slipped, they fell, they died. And slap on the wrist, not even criminal, and we'll move along.
Wow.
See, I've thought this stuff through.
You have.
So what do you think of Ted Nugent's statement that this was the purest case of self-defense you could have ever asked for?
I think that Ted Nugent is below comment.
And we'll leave it at that, because I agree.
That's what I think of Ted Nugent.
Because I've heard this all day long. Well, this is a pure... And what I'm amazed at is, all of the local talk shows, all of the national... They're all reading from the same script, it seems. It was Obama's fault. It was because Obama said that the kid would have been one of his kids, looked like his kids. It was amazing to me how much everyone was reading off the same script.
Yes. Yes.
And, I guess maybe it's that I've lived a little bit and I've known people that I associate with someone like George Zimmerman. I've met people like that who, they wanted to be the cop. They wanted to be I worked as a security guard for a number of years. And I met a lot of people like that whose fantasy was someone, perp would get out of hand and we'd put him into place. And, as this whole thing unraveled, I can think of probably 10 people that I could see from my past doing kind of the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's scary, scary stuff. And I read a couple articles by former policemen who say, when I was on the beat, I met a bunch of guys like this too, and they're scary.
It is quite extraordinary because, people believe that they, or some people, I don't know whether he's one of them, some people believe that they sort of have a mission to be doing this.
But, one of the other things that kind of worries me out of this trial is, I heard one of the talk show host guys saying that Zimmerman had the right to confront this guy, this kid on the street. He had the absolute right.
Why?
To confront.
Why did he?
And that was my question. Why does he have the right to walk up to somebody who's doing nothing more than walking down the street with iced tea and Skittles, which, a lot of PR for Skittles, I guess. Why does he have the right to confront him on the street? When I was a kid, someone walked up to you and confronted you. That was a fight waiting to happen. So,
yeah,
Zimmerman's an old problem. I mean, he's not much younger than I am. I assume same kind of world view that if you confront somebody, you put your finger in their face, get ready. It's on.
It's on.
Yeah, I go back to when I was a kid. I just turned 18. We were joyriding. I told this earlier. We were joyriding, and this guy in his probably 40s, road raging behind us because we were going so slow. And he cut out in front of me and jumped out of the car and slammed my head between the door and the car, and we got into this fist fight, and I'm literally kicking him in the behind in the middle of the street. And now I'm thinking, his wife said, you dumb, you know what, get your behind in the car. You got what you deserved. I'm thinking now, if that was me today, the guy that just turned shot me.
Yeah.
And he would have been okay.
Yeah.
Wow. A very bizarre precedent, and I guess it is the way we're going. Let's move along. It looks like President Obama, who's responsible for this miscarriage of justice, bringing Zimmer to trial. I'm not quite sure how, but he's responsible. He and H.W. Bush awarded the 5,000th Point of Light Award.
They did award the 5,000th Point of Light Award today. And Neil Bush was there, too, as well as Barbara Bush. This is something, remember, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush inaugurated this back in 1989 when he talked about the points of light going up.
1,000 points of light, and I'm going over from that time period, from back in the...
5,000, it's daily, only, you see.
It's only went up 5 times?
Yeah, 5,000, it's because it's daily, and these people who do pretty amazing things, and they were given to a couple from Union, Iowa, which is a town of less than 800 people, and they had gone to Tanzania, and they'd seen children dying of starvation, and they came back, and they decided that they needed to start feeding hungry children. So they started 9 years ago, and they've now provided 232 million meals to hungry children worldwide.
Wow. And how'd they do that?
I don't know how they did it.
Maybe we should put them in charge of some of our government programs.
Yeah.
Maybe we should get rid of Sally Struthers and get these two.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I have a picture of them in my news notes tomorrow. They're just an unassuming elderly couple.
And where'd the funding come from? How, you know, and just no detail, just that they did it.
I think if you do the research, I think you can find it. I've been trying to find the research. I mean, if you go to Points of Light, you can find the story.
Because, you know, I got to be honest with you. You know, that's fantastic, feeding all of those people, and maybe we could do some of that here. I mean,
some of them are here. Some of them are here. They're all over the world.
Because, you know, we've got Republicans here in Pennsylvania who are holding this big poverty forum. They want to solve poverty and they want to feed hungry children, you know, by cutting food stamps and slashing social programs and cutting spending for all of that stuff. Somehow, miraculously, it's going to happen. Maybe these folks could help.
Maybe they could.
Just a thought, because, you know, our friends here in Harrisburg, they're looking for ideas. And these people have had some success.
Yeah, no, they really have. They really have. They're called Kathy Hamilton. Oh, no, the picture's gone. I hate when websites do that and the picture changes. They're called Kathy. I've done it 3 times. Oh, I can't do it. Anyway, I've been to Points of Light, and it is there. The story is there.
I'm going to have to look
all about
up.
Them, and it's there.
I'm going to have to look that up because, you know, here in Pennsylvania, they had their big meeting today and their big press conference, how the Republicans, in their worldview, they're going to help fight poverty because, you know, that Johnson thing, that didn't work. We just spent a lot of money, you know, feeding those kids, you know, programs that I remember as a kid, you know, school lunch programs and summer lunch programs, you know, that actually benefited people. No, those were bad, bad. They're going to come up with something different. Maybe paper mache or something. I don't know. Job skills, you know. Anyway, let's move along. Google, Facebook, Amazon, all of them, they're not happy with the Department of Justice and the SEC?
Well, they're not because it looked like for a minute there was something good going on. And that is that Senator Patrick Leahy is not happy that the government can get hold of your emails with just a subpoena without a warrant, right? They can do that. They can get all your online communications and content without a warrant.
Right.
So the Senate Judiciary Committee earlier this year approved legislation that would require government officials to obtain a warrant before demanding that an internet company turn over online communications and content. And this is on its way to becoming law. And I think that the House is, you know, there are quite a few people in the House who are on board with this kind of thing. Daryl Issa is pretty hot on this kind of stuff, too.
Good.
So the Justice Department and the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, say we need to be exempted.
Okay,
because we don't have warrant authority in civil cases, and the bill would impede critical investigations into antitrust and civil rights and environmental protection and financial fraud cases, and it's just going to get in our way of doing good, basically.
Okay, well, then let's just make up a court like they did with the FISA court and go do whatever you want and then come back and get one within 15 days.
Yeah, well, the privacy companies and the Googles said, look, regulators can still get the information by subpoenaing the individuals who are under investigation. You can still get it.
And that seems reasonable to me.
Yeah. That's how it seems to them, too. They just think this is an end run.
I agree. You know, I went to the Bush Library, which was,
oh, you did.
Which was fabulous. We walked in and we saw the Wall of Freedom.
Oh, you did.
Have you heard of the Wall of Freedom?
You talked to me about the Wall of Freedom.
The Wall of Freedom is right there with all of the all of today's robber barons, all the people who donated money to build a library in granite. It's a massive wall. It's huge with all these the big names right there. And then just off to the right is the Registry of Freedom, where if you gave smaller amounts, they'd put your name on a Word file, and you could scan through them. All about the money. But in the Bush Library, one of the things that caught my attention is they highlighted the fact that they came up with new surveillance techniques. They, you know, they have new investigative techniques. And they're all of these things that we're talking about now, these email, all of this surveillance stuff, all of it is Bush's policy that Obama's just said, yeah, I like that.
Yes.
And what's amazing to me is all the Republicans are losing their mind by pointing at Obama, as were when Bush was in office. I was losing my mind pointing at Bush. Now I'm pointing at Obama because it's both of them.
Yes. It's both of them. And I think two things. One is that Republicans, number one, didn't know about it under Bush.
No, I don't think they didn't care. I think they didn't care.
Well, and I think when they did know, they didn't care. But I think a lot of them didn't know about the vastness of it. But they don't care about it under Obama. Where are the privacy bills?
Yeah. Good point. Nowhere?
Nowhere.
Because we don't really care about privacy for you, Victoria. But our corporations, make sure, our corporate peoples, they're important.
Yeah.
And I loved the corporate peoples at the Bush Library. There was so much fun at the Bush Library. You could play this like a Ouija board game called The Balance of Power. You really need to take an entertaining trip. Never mind Disneyland, never mind, you know, Cedar Point, never mind Hershey Park or any of those amusement parks. You have to go to the Bush Library. Nothing but fun and enjoyment.
It sounds an absolute blast.
From the greatest president in the history of civilization, or so they tell you.
I'm there.
The Wall of Freedom. I wanted to go through. I wish I had more time. I would have gone through and counted the number of times freedom was used. Ah, fun.
It's a mantra.
Can't wait. Can't wait to go back. Victoria, it's always been great talking with you.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Earth, sky. Researchers have learned that the toxins that make snake venom deadly can evolve back into completely harmless molecules.
This discovery could lead to new drugs for life-threatening conditions including cancer, diabetes, and high blood pressure.
The toxins in snake venom evolve in a special gland in the snake's body. They start out as harmless compounds that have been doing different jobs elsewhere for the snake. In fact, a snake's venom gland appears to be a melting pot, a place for evolving new functions for molecules. Some of these molecules are retained in venom for killing the snake's prey. Others go on to serve new functions in other tissues in the body.
The idea that there are many harmless versions of venom toxins throughout a snake's body suggests a new avenue of drug development. Ex-venom compounds might be valuable because they're made up of what scientists call bioactive proteins, which already are naturally designed to target metabolic processes. And that's precisely what you need drugs to do.
So studies of deadly snake venom might lead to better human health. These scientists published their study in the journal Nature Communications in late 2012. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. For more stories about the human world, visit us at earthsky.org and follow Earth Sky Science on Twitter.
Search snake venom at earthsky.org for more on this story. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Age. The Rick Smith Show.
Evidently, the time came when, the 73-year-old singer of the song there, Lester Chambers of the Chambers Brothers, doing a concert in Haywood, California, Blues Festival. The verdict had just come down. Lester, the 73-year-old man, says, "You know what? I'm going to dedicate this song to the kid who got killed." 43-year-old woman jumps up on the stage and pushes this old man down on the ground. It looked like, from the video, she's going to get over and kick him, but, she was stopped. And I'm looking at this, and I'm going, he says we're going to dedicate the song to the kid like 4.5 minutes earlier. And the woman just decides, what do you do? Are you standing there just stewing? That, well, I can't believe you're going to dedicate a song to that. Jumps up on stage and pushes an old man to the ground. Is that racist? I just think it's stupid. And, this is how insane we've become. Man. And it's a woman yet. Equal rights, Insanity is by gender. Wow. And, I look at this whole thing. And so let me ask you this. Now that I'm thinking about it, a crazy woman jumps up. Crazy woman jumps out of the crowd. You're a 73-year-old man who's just been pushed to the ground, and you're packing heat. Can you shoot her? Can we shoot her right there? Might be doing a public service. Sanity. This is clearly a breach of sanity. This is clearly a moment where you go, exactly what in the hell are you doing jumping up on stage? So could he shoot her? He must have feared for his well-being, because they end up taking him to the hospital. And if you're the other people in the crowd who went to see Lester Chambers perform, now he's being rushed off to the hospital. You've now lost your opportunity to see the concert. Can you beat her up? There's a lot of opportunities here. Can you shoot her? This is where we're going with all of this insanity. And maybe it's a good thing. Maybe, as I said earlier,
to a friend of mine. Maybe this is how we thin the herd. Maybe. We arm everybody. It's sad. Just insane. And you know what it comes back to? It comes back to dysfunctional government. It comes back to the people who despise government so much, throwing a wrench into the wheels just to gum it up, just to make it dysfunctional. Because, you know, I saw one, North Korea has a higher approval rating than Congress does. And why is that? Because it's viewed as dysfunctional. And it's because you've got this infection. You've got this disease in the Republican Party. You've got these ideological radicals who have taken over the Republican Party, who don't give a tinker's damn about the country. It's about their blind faith, religious ideology. That's all it's about. Sad, sad stuff. Anyway, any part of the program you missed, therickSmithShow.com. That's where you're going to get the podcast, Stitcher on your smartphone. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm interested in all contacts, all emails. I'd be interested in your thoughts on could Lester shoot her? I'm waiting to hear the response, because to me, I'm now thinking in the new America, the new normal, Lester's got to be fearful for his life. 73-year-old man, pushed to the ground, crazed woman with an insane look in her eye. I'm thinking stand his ground, or at least lay on his ground. And, you know, a couple shots to the chest, right? Is that the new America? Is that how you want it? Sure hope not. See you back here tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial mystery.